The Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment.
The Midweek Drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now.
Well, part two, the adventure continues. Even though Phil Leonis can't join us because he's actually seeing a show in New York, Graham Harper's with us. How are you, Graham?
I'm very well. Happy Christmas, everyone. Happy New Year.
Always good to actually get the festivities out of the way. From the first part of the programme, of course, we have the return of Jessica Burtis and our Romanian correspondent extraordinaire, Anna Teodora Coscanel. And we're delighted to welcome back to the programme for certainly a very festive, cheery time. In fact, many people would actually say the holidays wouldn't be the holidays without featuring Armin Shimerman. How are you, Armin?
I'm very fine. Thank you very much. I'm very green today.
Clearly, it's very important. It's nice to see that.
We've had a lot of fun. Right now, I'm in a different venue. I have roofers on my house. We had leaks in the last rainstorm, and so they're working away.
Ah, well hopefully right that. That'll get sorted out. And, roofers can be very tricky at the best of times. Lord knows I know this. Armin, in the first part of the programme, we were speaking with Sarah Huntley about the importance of the voiceover and indeed the skill set that you need within the voiceover. And you certainly can provide an excellent masterclass when it comes to voiceover work, because not only, of course, are you known for clearly Star Trek and Buffy, also Ratchet and Clank, A Crack in Time, video games extraordinaire. Is that voiceover skill set something which, in essence, again, we underestimate because it involves so much of our skills as an actor to actually work through that? How do you relate to the voiceover, Armin?
Well, first of all, I look at the material and try to imagine what the character is, and then yes, you can't use your face, you can't use your hands, you can't use anything but your voice and and you try to put everything in that. And you tend to make a little bit larger than usual choices because it has to resonate in the voice as opposed to in the physical appearance. I must say, I've just recently been working on a game that uses motion capture, and that's a new ingredient, which means then the physical things are actually added into that. But as far as voiceover itself, It's a matter of concentrating everything into the choices you make, which show themselves in your voice.
I was looking back over the history of Hollywood
and you can use various tones.
I was looking back over the history of Hollywood, it's obviously a slight sort of time delay there. Not to worry. I was thinking about the Disney Corporation and their days with Dumbo, which Walt Disney always referred to as his favorite movie. I have to agree. I think it's one of those heartrending movies. But he said that was a case of where they were really experimenting a lot with their vocal actors in terms of how they were demonstrating that. Do you feel that voiceover work has changed over the years? Are you again getting much more hyper, as you say, motion picture capture in there? Or is it a case of fundamentally it's the power of the voice?
It's always the power of the voice, but it is changing fundamentally because of the motion capture, which is adding physicality to vocal qualities. But also the technology is getting better so that, you know, it used to be that one had to go to a studio in order to do that because of the things that a studio could provide. Now a lot of voiceover can be done at home because the microphone, the delivery system are all much better than they used to be. But as far as the acting goes, I think the acting is pretty much the same. The acting all depends on what the tone is of the project, whether it's a voiceover for a commercial, a voiceover for a game, a voiceover for a movie. All those have different things that they need, and the actor must give to that project what is needed. Hmm.
Graham, you mostly deal with actors in the flesh, so to speak. Have you done any work where you've had to do, obviously, presumably some sort of additional dubbing has been required? And what's been your approach to the actor and the voiceover?
I have to say to you, hello, Armin. I'm a director. I've worked in terms of compete with Star Trek. I worked on a series which is still going here called Doctor Who. And in one of the Doctor Who stories, The Waters of Mars,
yes,
there's a robot called Gadget Gadget. And it had a voice. Nobody knew what that voice was going to be until the dub. And we were going to have employ an actor to come and do a voiceover for that character. And so when we were shooting, every time Gadget Gadget turned up or was travelling along or doing anything, it had to say Gadget Gadget as it travelled along. So all the time, as it was travelling, it would be all appearing in a scene. It would go Gadget Gadget. Well, I used to do that voice on the set. I would do the voice so that the actors can respond to Gadget Gadget. And the producer was so thrilled by my version of my little voice doing this that they decided to forget getting an actor and that I was to dub it. So when you see that show go out, it's got my voice on it. The thing that I find difficult with actors is, as a director, on the set, that's not a problem at all. We all get together and I can direct and create and ask and try and nurture if the performances aren't going the right way. Get that going. But when it comes to voiceover, I find it really difficult to find the right expressions, the right key word, if I want a voice or a line to be said in a slightly different way. I always find it very hard to do, to try and get into the brain of the actor exactly what I'm dreaming of. It's very hard. And it doesn't happen very often, but every now and then there comes a moment where you feel you've got to say, I want something different, something slightly more complex than that, or whatever it's going to be. And I find that a difficult challenge. Does that happen to you?
It does. The best director I have for voiceover usually give me one of two things, either a very short request. Can you make it louder? Can you make it sharper? Can you make it higher? That sort of thing. Those are generalities, and those are very helpful. But sometimes if someone will just identify something akin to what the voice should be, well, this should be like the character in such and such, or this should be like the sound you make when you come to into a surprise party or whatever. Those are very valuable directions for actors. And that's a totally different direction take than when I work on stage or when I work on film. And because voiceover tends to want to react very quickly, you want very short, simple directions.
Yes, the stuff you said earlier, I do that. Obviously, I can say sharper, louder, more dynamic, whatever. I would never dream of giving an actor a line reading of a line the way I would want it to say that I've got in my head. I would never dream of saying that to an actor. What an imposition that would be. So it's the key word that you just
and
said.
An actor would kill you. And an actor would kill you if you did.
Oh, no. It's never happened, thank God.
One of the reasons we've actually...
No, an actor doesn't want to be told how to do it, but they don't mind being given direction about how to approach it. As long as you don't ask them to replicate something you've just said, I think every actor is looking for direction,
I mean, it's funny, today I was watching Gone with the Wind, would you believe? And that famous last line that...
Clark Gable
says, he says,
frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Thank you, my dear, I don't give a damn. And I've puzzled that, as many people have. What a strange intonation, and yet it's become so famous and so Rhett Butler, but it doesn't quite make sense to me. Very interesting. And I wonder why they left it in that way. There's an intonation that's wrong, and I'm sure the director was desperately dreaming of telling him how to say it or get him to say it in a different way, but it didn't happen.
Well, certain actors after a while won't take direction, unfortunately. I don't know whether Clark Gable was one of them.
Yes.
I do know Frank Sinatra was. He would two takes and that was it. No, he couldn't go any further. He wouldn't go any further. But I don't know why Clark Gable inflects that way. We all know that it could involve any thousands of things that might have been happening at that moment when they were shooting the scene. He could have been angry. He could have been happy. He could have wanted to go home. It could have been early. It could have been late. Who knows? Any one of those factors can influence a performance, as you must know.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
One of the reasons I wanted to focus a little bit on the voiceover today was because Victoria Simmons, who sadly can't be with us because she's lost her voice, find it soon, Victoria, has recently actually been doing a voiceover for The Adventures of Sleepy the Magical Bear, in which she portrays the voice of Finkel. Now, Graham, obviously you've heard Victoria sing for it from that point of view, but I think she was also fascinated in getting the kind of input in terms of voice acting and so on and so forth. So, anyway, an interesting line. Jessica, given that we've talked about the South and, of course, Gone with the Wind, which is not too far away from North Carolina, of course, in the whole setting, any questions that you'd like to put to either Iman or indeed Graham?
Yeah, I'm curious with the voice acting. If there was a character that you could voice some archetype, who do you think you would be best cast as for a role you haven't done yet for a voice casting?
For myself, I don't know. I'm always intrigued by the material that's put in front of me, and then I try to come up with a voice that matches that material. We get a little bit of direction when we're sent what's called sides, and they recommend certain things, or they may reference another performance. But I'm always intrigued by the material, and the material sort of inspires me to find a voice. My voices tend to be like my own. I tend to get cast for my own voice, but on occasion, I'm thinking of two occasions, two master games that I've been involved in. One is called Ratchet and Clank, where I talk way up here, and then this is the voice of the character. Now that's that. And then there was another game called BioShock, which I was involved with, where I played a wonderful character named Andrew Ryan. And it's my voice. No, excuse me. It's my performance. But they've turned up the bass so much that when people hear me and they compare it to the voice of Andrew Ryan, they can hear it's my intonations, but they can also, but the bass quality is very different. So it all depends. It depends on the material. It's not something that I want to do. It's really something that I want to do for someone else.
Yeah. I'm sort of surprised that we haven't got Philip Herdwood on today,
There's
because
only so
Philip's
much goodness you can fit into one 40-minute sequence, Graham. Come on now.
well, that's true, and he will talk a lot, so that's true. But Phil is an actor like yourself, I mean, and he's a really good actor, but he specializes in voiceover work. He's had a lot of voiceover work over the last 20 years, etc. And so you'll hear his voice on many, many adverts, and also presenting shows, the voice that booms and introducing so and so coming downstairs. He has a fantastic knack of being able to mimic very famous people. So it's easy. I've worked with him a lot because he's an actor. He's a go-to actor. If you want a particular kind of voice or you want a mimic of a particular actor or famous person, he's the man. He can do that. He's very, very clever. And he does it. He goes from one character to another. It's absolutely brilliant.
But these days we can look to
Yeah, I must
ChatGPT and artificial intelligence.
please
See,
not.
that's going to make a great that's going to make a great difference in voiceover work in the coming years. It's what the union went on strike for recently, was to protect actors from that onslaught of artificial intelligence. And the voiceover community is the one that is the most fearful because it's very easy to create voices now, and you don't need to hire an actor or for that matter, a director who does a voice. So, but
Thanks.
that's something we're all.
The only thing please God, I'm right. What you can't get is a great performance from a AI. I can't see that. I cannot see the difference of an actor. And look, when as a director, the most important notes that I ever give are what you've been thinking just before you walk through that door. When you're at the other side of the set about to walk into a scene, it's what's in your brain, what's just happened, or in other words, my job as a director, because we work backwards and forwards and sideways, nothing's actually we
In
don't
linear
start.
form, Graham.
That's the word.
Linear. It's not ever linear.
See
Yes,
how
it's linear.
difficult a director I am?
It's like
Is
living in the
finding those
Deep Space
words.
Nine universe all the time with those prophets.
Yeah, but it is to remind the actor what the scene was before that we did 3 weeks ago or about to do in 3 weeks' time, and what the thinking is. And we have a discussion about that because they may have an opinion on that. They may have a thought that it's not quite the way they are going to play it. If you're doing a scene that comes before a scene you're doing 3 weeks later, you need to discuss that with an actor, and you need to know that they're on the same wavelength, that they want to give you exactly the note you're about to give or that you're giving. And if you give the note to say, well, I think when you do that scene, which comes before, blah, 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 whatever is going to happen in that, you haven't done it. And most scenes, we discuss them literally minutes before we're about to shoot them. We discuss elements of those scenes, and what we want to get out of it together. And so the important note for me is to just remind the artist just what they're thinking is, or how angry they are, or how docile they are, or enigmatic, or whatever. And that usually then gives you something smashing. So the actor has something to hang on to if they want it. If they don't, we discuss that, and I will either agree or disagree. Usually I agree because the actor has given it a huge amount of thought from the beginning to the end of what he or she would like to portray, and how it forms and develops and changes.
And that is the benefit of having a director. It is also the benefit of doing work in front of the camera, because you can have those discussions. When you do voiceover work for games, and since we're talking about voiceovers, you don't get any of that. You don't even know what the scene is about. You don't know what you said. Well, you may know what you said before, but you have no idea what you're about to say because all you get is one line at a time. And if it is linear, if it progresses from the beginning to the end, then you know what you said before, but you don't know where you're going with it. And usually when I've finished a long speech and I get it in bits and pieces as I'm recording, I go, oh, I'd like to do that over again, because now I know what the whole speech is about and I know what the theme is. But you're absolutely right. No matter what medium you're working in, it is essential to know what you were thinking before you came in, before in through the door. Where you are coming from affects what you're about to say. That is standard acting, directing philosophy.
Yeah.
Graham, who would you like to have done a voiceover for? I mean, any particular character? Would you always have seen yourself as being, I don't know, the voice of Sooty in Sooty and Sweet, possibly? You know?
But, no. I started off as a child actor, and when I was 16, I knew that I wasn't. I had huge stage fright, and in those days, there was lots of theatre and not so much television and film, not in England anyway. And
it didn't
I
stop Olivier. Fright. It didn't stop Olivier.
No, it didn't stop me. I wanted to become a director. I knew that's where I wanted to try and get to. I didn't think I'd ever reach it, but at least I had a goal. And it took me 14 years. No, it took me 20 years from the age of 16 to get to be a director, to impress somebody that give me a break. But I worked my way through the system as assistant directors, etc. I never want to do voiceover work. I do like making funny sounds and doing, when in the dub, I like to get, I'm hands on. I want to get in there and press buttons. And I will make the odd, like I did Gadget Gadget. That's fun, but that was a fun, all that was Gadget Gadget. He didn't speak, he didn't say hello, how are you?
Oh, yes, but the tone, the emphasis, the sheer significance of the two segments, Gadget Gadget. I mean, Vivian Lee would probably have replaced Tomorrow is Another Day with Gadget Gadget.
If I may say what the deliciousness of doing voiceover work is for me, which I think Graham would understand, I think all of us would understand, is that I get cast for the way in front of on camera work. I get cast for what I look like, what I sound like, but usually it's what I look like. When I walk in a room, people will decide, well, is that what we were thinking of for this character or not? But the beauty, the exquisiteness of doing voiceovers is you get cast in parts that you would never play on camera, and you get an opportunity to expand your envelope of performance. I mean, I'm a short character actor. No one would ever cast me as Superman, ever. And yet I have done Superman and voiceovers.
You'll always be Superman to me, Armin. I was thinking of you as the next James Bond. I mean, Daniel Craig couldn't have a worthier successor, really, in terms of that overall line. Let's turn Alex, to our Romanian correspondent, Anna Teodora Koskinol. Anna, you've been listening to this. I know you had some experience as a child yourself in terms of acting and various other bits and pieces. How does it relate to your own experience in Romania?
Well, related to my own experience in Romania, I think it's way vaster than mine, obviously. But what Armin said, that doing voiceovers, you are able to be casted for things you would never do while playing on stage or being in front of the camera, I think it's so true. Because I remember when I was in high school, I think, and I had to play for, it was a short movie for our high school. There was this girl that, it was on screen, obviously, and there was this girl that was the most popular girl of the high school, and she was very, I don't know how to call her, not shy, I don't know how to call her, and I'm very shy in real life. And after that, there was an animation made of that little play, of that little script, and I was casted to do the voiceover for that. And I was thinking I could never do that in real life, or even on stage, maybe do the things that she was doing or say what she was saying, but behind the words and behind just a microphone, I could be whoever I want. And I think that's also with radio. Behind radio, or while being on radio, you can say many things that you wouldn't be able to say on TV while the camera is basically watching you, because you get all shy and you're thinking, oh, people are watching me, people are doing that. While saying those things, you think you consider yourself, I think, safe in a way, but I might be wrong, but this is how I see it. And I think I told you a few weeks ago that I think for you, for example, I take you as an example because of your voice, being able to attract people by them only hearing your voice and not seeing you, and with the voice fluctuations and how you engage them with only your voice, I think that's a real talent.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I think that's a real talent. But if we have time, I really have a question for both of you that I want to ask you. And I wanted to know if it ever happened to you to work with an actor, to have a colleague that was really, really, really talented, but it was so shy that he or she couldn't get himself to do the to do the character properly. And what happened with them, or what did you do to them so they could get the help they need?
Amen.
Armin, yeah, thanks. You go first because I've got to think about
No. That's a Graham question. I will answer after him.
that. I mean, it is. I'm trying to think. Wow. I mean, most of the. Oh, you're right. Somewhere in my mind, this has happened. It rings a bell, and I'm trying to think who it was and what it was.
You don't have to
And
mention names, Graham. They can be sort of changed to protect the innocent if you wish.
no, I don't mind. Well, I won't tell you the name of the person. I'm just trying to think of the moment that happened. Because normally, so listen, casting now is totally different to how it was when I first started. So I started directing in the 80s, 1980s. I'm still directing, but it has changed the way we cast. So I would meet actors with my assistant, or we had a casting director, and I would meet variety of actors for each part in anything I was doing. And I like to pride myself that I, amongst others, because there's a producer and the executive producer, between us, we will decide on a group of three or four people which one we really want. And I'll give my opinion because I met them, and usually they haven't met them. I've met them, I've done it, I talked to them, gone through it, and that to take my word as to what I thought each one could give. And why they were so different. And so there'd be one, two, three in an order. Now it's totally different. Now I see lots of tapes. I don't want to see lots of tapes, to be honest. Self-tapes, because the actor or actress has not had a chance to hear from either me or anybody as to a way of playing that character, you know, to do it once and then try another way of playing it. So I'm seeing lots of tapes. And occasionally, I will insist that I want to meet that particular person or those three people for this part because I want to find out about them. I want to see whether we're going to spar off each other, and I want to see them physically and meet them physically and hear them read it in person in front of me, or whatever. And to be able to say, "I'd love you to play that again, but this time, what's happened before? Here we go again." It's what I was saying to Armin before. This is what you've been thinking. This is what's happened to you. And as you walk through the door in this scene, you need that angst or that whatever it is that I think it needs. And you see, with someone who is really smart, really, really special, you see a fantastic performance there and then, even though it can be worked on, it's going to be different on the day. You see something really special happen. Sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. The actor doesn't get it, and I'm afraid they don't get the part. When an actor comes to see you, if they don't get the part, but you love them, and they don't get the part, they're in your brain, and they will get to work with you in the with luck in the future. So it's all's not lost. But sometimes there are actors who don't take notes, who and that is what you're talking about. Unfortunately, I don't remember it actually happening on the set. It usually happens in a reading, you know, when we're casting, and they don't get the part because they don't take direction. Now, that may be partly my fault because I wasn't a very good director at that moment, finding the right thing to get them to unload, open up, and change it. But most actors can really take a note and really turn it on and change completely, and you suddenly go, yes. Even though that's not the way you want to play it, you just know you've got a really special person in front of you who can take a note and make something really special happen.
Amen.
That's great advice. That's great, great advice. Yes, if an actor can't take direction, it's time to perhaps look for another actor. That the chemistry isn't right between either the director and the actor, or between the actors themselves. But to answer it from an actor's point of view, I can't hire or fire another actor. But what I can do is, when I am a series regular or a very recurring character on a TV show, and I'm very comfortable in that setting, and a new person shows up, a guest star, a day player shows up for that particular day's work, and they're nervous because they've never been on that set before. Certainly, when I was doing Star Trek, there were so many strange things for new people to look at, including my makeup, that what I could do was to sit down with the actor and work with them to make them feel more comfortable, so that the thing that Graham just said that got them the job, that quality that got them the job, can be enhanced, and they feel comfortable about working with me and showing that quality, so that the director and the production gets the performance that they want.
It's interesting you say that because there's another aspect to actors, which is fantastic, and that is, as a director, sometimes you meet people you don't get it, or it goes wrong, and or there's a difficulty, or they are pompous oafs and they don't fit in with the whole scene, and you don't know, as a director, you don't know how to sort that without affecting them and the performance or whatever, and keeping a great atmosphere on the set, because you're only together a very short time, so you need a good atmosphere. It needs to be fun. Everybody needs to know they're coming to work to enjoy themselves, to actually have a chance to do something special. Everybody, not just the artist, everyone in the crew. No bullying. It is fun, and when things go wrong, you find the way out of it together. And so, as a leader, I have to find the way out with everybody. We all do it together. I don't do it on my own. I can't. What actors do is, if they've got a bad penny, all the actors, especially if there's a leading actor, but there are other leading actors, so you've got three leads, those two other leads and a gang of support will put those people, put them in their place. They'll sort them out quietly, off-site, offset. They will sort it out. I'm not talking about the major stars, the Tom Cruises. I'm afraid, I don't know what Tom Cruise is like to work with. He looks and sounds as though he's good, great fun and really organized. But actors tend to look after their own and make people toe the line, basically, which is wonderful. For me, I find that a joy to have an ensemble of great actors who all help each other and back each other's and got their backs, as it were, as Armin's just said, and help each other to make scenes work really well. Gosh, it sounds so
And I'll
easy.
just add another, absolutely right. Think of it as a trapeze act, that we're all up there in the air, hanging, from our ankles and our knees. And we want to make sure that when we jump, when we do what we do, that the other person will catch us. And when they jump, that we'll be ready to catch them when that happens.
That's
But
excellent.
that is the analogy I often use for this. But thank you, Greg.
Yeah, that's really, really good.
It's like a working trust exercise, really, which is always wonderful. Armin, very briefly, hopefully 2024 will not see another SAG after a guild strike. Was the resolution satisfactory, or do you think we've just
No, but there
sorted?
might be other strikes.
Say that again.
Graham, kindly repeat yourself.
No,
Yes, what I said, there may be other strikes. Yes.
yes.
It's not going
If
to
it
be writer
happens.
actor strikes. We've settled all differences. But there is the crew people, they have a contract coming up as well. But that's neither here nor there. That's not part of your question. Go ahead, Graham. Excuse me, Alex. Go ahead, say it again.
I was just saying, do you feel as though the resolution to the Actors Guild strike was satisfactory, or do you think it's simply just holding fire until we have to renegotiate again?
Well, having negotiated contracts for the guild myself in the past, I know that it's always a progressive thing. You get everything you can at that particular of our contract, that in 3 years' time we'll try to do a little bit better. But to answer your question, Alex, Yes, I find the present contract to be very satisfactory. This question of AI that we have touched upon needs to be further addressed. There needs to be further. God, in the last contract negotiation was a very, very good beginning. And I know in the years to come, it'll only get better.
Can I ask a question?
Very
Which
quickly,
is really
Graham, over to you.
Jessica and Anna, and that is when you listen. I don't know if you listen to radio plays. Well, Anna does because she's just talked about it. Jessica, whether you listen to radio plays, but when I listen, all you've got is the voices and of the sound effects. I imagine I can see those people if it's a really well done play, and those voices really conjure up. So it was interesting that Iron says, I get to play characters I would never ever be cast, particularly for my physique, the way I look, and whatever. But my voice can play those parts. Do you get that satisfaction? Do you have an imagination? Do the voices conjure up images for you, or do you just listen? It's just a story being read.
Jessica.
I definitely do imagine things. I've actually been listening to this audio series recently, and I do not like the books that they're reading. I don't like the plot. I don't like the, I think it's horrible writing, but the woman who is narrating these audiobooks is so talented, and the voices that she does are so vivid and they fit the character so perfectly that I keep listening to the series because her storytelling capability is just incredible, all with her voice. She's not coming up with the plot or changing the writing, it's all her voice. And seeing all the people in the comments saying the same thing of, I don't like this series, but I am still listening because you have made such a vivid story with your voice. And yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah,
If
interesting.
I may, if I may, I'm looking at the poster of Hamlet behind Graham on his wall, and that is why you've just put your finger on why we go to see so many different Hamlets. Because we're looking for that Hamlet that speaks to us the most. They all say the same words, but it's the performance, it's the take on the character, on the language said and the situations given that makes us want to enjoy one Hamlet more than another.
And that's a perfect way to go to the same words, different questions. Graham, would you like to put the first of the last two questions to Armin, please?
Armin. Have you had a reasonably interesting conversation with this?
Yes, I have. I always enjoy doing Alex's chat shows, but this one is one of my favorites. Thank you very much, everybody.
Well, then,
And
can
will
we
you
look forward to seeing
be
you
back
again in
again?
2024?
Absolutely, Alex. And next time that this feedback won't be there because I'll be in my house and not in my garage. And we won't have this internet problem.
It's all working perfectly. And Graham, has it been good for you?
Yes, really, really interesting.
Excellent. Well, one of these days, I'm sure you should actually get Armin Shimerman on one of your projects. There we are. I'm just sort of
Sure,
saying,
that'd be
in
exciting.
terms of directors and so
You
on.
have to talk to the British. You have to talk to British Equity first.
Okay, I bet we can win.
Of course, you're
I
Midweek
bet you we
Drive
can.
alumni. It's very important. Jessica, as always, a pleasure, a delight. We'll see you again very soon. Likewise, Anna, to Graham Harper, to Armin Shimerman, to Jessica Burtis, and to Anna Teodora Koskinol. Huge thanks. And I think actually we probably need to go out in the Scarlett O'Hara line, basically. And Graham, I'm going to have you deliver the Clark Gable line, if you wish, in whichever style you're going to go through. So I'll do the sort of Scarlett O'Hara. Tomorrow is another day.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
rain is softly falling on the old magnolia tree. A long hot summer comes calling. Can't believe you're leaving me. I watch you from the window of my mansion with just two rooms. Some peaches grow wild in Georgia. Guess you got some growing to do. And you're gone with the wind. You keep blowing in and out of my life again. Our never ending love just ended again. Like a sweet southern breeze, you're gone with the wind. Guess you'll capture Atlanta. Bet you'll set that town on fire. A southern belle without a ring is every gentleman's desire. But this time you turn around and take me for what I am. Before the rebel in me sets you free and says I don't give a damn. Girl, you're gone. Our never-ending love just ended again. Like a sweet southern breeze, you're gone with the wind. Ooh, the cotton fields are calling, the willows weep for you. Darling, my tears are falling, they cover Dixie like the dew. Ooh, you're gone. Our never-ending love just ended again. Like a sweet southern breeze, you're gone.
I thought love had come to stay, but just like a bird in flight, love has vanished overnight. Gone with the wind, just like a leaf that has blown away. Gone with the wind. My romance has flown away. Yesterday's kisses are still on my lips. I had a lifetime of heaven at my fingertips, but now all is gone. Gone is the rapture that thrilled my heart. Gone with the wind. the gladness that thrilled my heart, just like a flame. Love burned brightly, then became an empty smoke dream that has gone, gone with the wind.
Quality of life. It's one of those wonderful words and phrases which frequently gets bandied about when we start talking about health and ensuring that we maintain our good health, etc. So therefore, it's particularly bemusing to see why people are still actually engaging in actually setting fire to dried leaves and then proceeding to imbibe the various noxious fumes that come from that. We're talking, of course, about smoking, and with a new campaign literally designed to hopefully stop families spreading the whole thing down in terms of parents smoking, seen as role models, children smoking, etc., etc. We're delighted to welcome a true favourite, a legend when it comes to, obviously, medical advice across the globe, especially with respect to, obviously, Siren Radio and Midweek Drive. It's Dr. Sarah Jarvis. How are you, Sarah?
A pleasure as ever, and all the better for being on air with you.
Oh, my word. There you go. Well, let's move on to this particular survey. Well, not survey, actually. It's a campaign, the NHS Smoke-Free Campaign. I mean, we're obviously familiar with Stoptober, but this is basically stop for good and don't even start, presumably.
So it is indeed. So what we're looking at now is we've got 5.3 million smokers in England, but we are calling on them to think that if they quit, it won't just be good for their health, but they could help ensure that young people aren't being influenced to smoke. Now, anyone who, like me, has had a teenager will know that the vast majority of the time you feel that they pay no attention to you, anything you do, anything you say. But actually, parents may not appreciate just how much of an impact their own smoking has on their children's behaviour. It doesn't matter if you try to smoke outside or away from your children or grandchildren. Children, young people really do pick it up. If you grow up in a household where your primary caregivers or adults, parents and so on in the household smoke, you are almost three times more likely to smoke yourself. And that means, of course, if you can manage to quit, then you are setting a really, really good example to them and showing them that it's not something cool to do, and hopefully having a real impact on the likelihood of them starting in the first place.
Absolutely. I must have bucked the trend here, because both my parents did actually smoke, but I never have. And I always thought it was a kind of rebellion that
aren't you the lucky
refused
one
to do that.
I mean, I think it's interesting when we say, you know, three times more likely to smoke, that doesn't mean that all of them will, of course. So there will be others, Alex, like you, who didn't. But, you know, we need to bear in mind that 17 out of 20 smokers started before they were 20. Mm. More than one in 10 17-year-old smokes, and more than half of those started between the ages of 14 and 17. Now, that's really important, A, because it's a new generation, but B, because if you started under 18, compared to someone who started over the age of 21, you are likely, if you started under 18, to have higher levels of nicotine dependence, and that makes it even harder to quit.
We know from numerous health factors how damaging smoking can actually be to our health and well-being, as we said. That message clearly has got through to a large majority of people, but it's still out there. And I mean, I'm just, in a sense, as you can tell by my voice at present, Sarah, I'm just bemused by why people would ever even begin to start this kind of thing, basically, because it just seems to be insane.
Well, the simple fact is that if your parents smoke or your caregivers smoke, you are going to think that it is more normal. Now, young people perhaps, you know, think, oh, well, all those health concerns are a long way away. I don't need to worry about it. By the time I get to that age, then there won't be a problem anyway, because I'll have quit years ago. And the next thing, they have no idea just how difficult it is to stop smoking once you've started. Mm.
I mean, we've heard, obviously, as part of this campaign, the words of former England footballer David James, who apparently started smoking when he was 15 and had 15 years of smoking. Lord knows how he actually sort of managed to keep his health levels up to that side of things there. But
well, with difficulty is the answer. He said that, you know, there were times when he couldn't run twice around an athletics pitch because of his smoking. And that was as a very young man who ought to be at the absolute peak of physical fitness.
And what are the barriers then to quitting smoking? Is it more than just peer pressure and having to actually say, well, I'm only smoking because it's cool? I mean, we heard a few years ago there were people who actually felt that they had to smoke to actually keep the pounds off and to see it as a dietary supplement, which is, again, crazy. Is it all a mixture of things that we kind of all build up in terms of, well, I'd like to, but I can't because...
So everybody's journey to stop smoking is very, very different. It's very complicated. No two smokers are the same. But what we do see, for instance, is that we know that it's very addictive. We know that a lot of people have tried and not succeeded before, often because they've tried going cold turkey, which is the least effective way of quitting smoking. They haven't necessarily taken up that advice. You know, all you need to do, you can make it so much less difficult if you search smoke-free. That'll take you to the Better Health Quit Smoking website. The NHS is offering all sorts of local stop smoking services for free. Advice on stop smoking aids, information on how vaping can help you quit smoking, all sorts of things. And I think it's all about personalising your journey. But if you've tried once and failed, and a lot of smokers have, because as I say, many times they've tried by, for instance, just going cold turkey or because their circumstances have changed or whatever else, then I think the feeling is, oh, well, I'm useless. I can't do it. That's not true. Anybody can try, and most people have to try more than once in order to quit. Some people do it first time. Hurrah, even better. But, you know, it's not easy. But just before because you haven't succeeded before doesn't mean you can try now. And maybe now you have an added incentive. You know, we know stopping smoking is the best thing you can do for your health. Almost all my patients know that. But an awful lot of them don't recognise that by stopping smoking, they can greatly reduce the chance of children around them starting to smoke. And that's why we want to use this as an opportunity to say, make 2024 the year you quit for yourself, for your family, and for the people around you.
The media in the 20th century possibly carries a lot of weight for, again, influencing folk in various ways. I mean, I think back over episodes of the Gerry Anderson series Thunderbirds, in which Lady Penelope would generally light up a cigarette every so often, albeit with a cigarette holder. I mean, without wishing to actually redress and sort of say we can't just wipe all those things out and digitally remove them from the whole process, do you think that's also something which probably, looking back, maybe one needs to be careful of, just as, you know, as is the case with other things, alcohol, for instance, consumption and such like. We need to just be wary of what we see and don't necessarily imitate what we see our people or folk doing on television.
Yes, I mean, I think we do still have some people on television who smoke. The majority of people don't. But of course, we've also got, you know, we've now made a big difference because of the combination of things like, you know, the smoking ban inside and, you know, nobody looking cool anymore. They're huddled around a single ashtray outside the pub at, you know, 11 o'clock at night, and it's absolutely freezing outside and they're all shivering around. It just all looks rather sad now, doesn't it? Nobody, I think, thinks smoking is cool. But I do worry about vaping, because although vaping is a highly effective way of stopping smoking, if you smoke, it is a very effective way of stopping smoking. And it is undoubtedly less dangerous to vape than it is to smoke. But there is no question that vaping can be, you know, something that young people are more likely to take up because they see it as glamorous. And that can mean that they end up addicted to tobacco, to nicotine.
I've always found probably the most poignant and indeed very sad image has been certainly in hospitals, where you used to see the situation where people would drag themselves out with the drip in hand, etc., and still have a cigarette outside. You just thought, oh, please, you know, I mean, it's just... again, just bizarre from that point of view, but still, never mind. That's human beings.
Alex, if you've never smoked, then it may seem bizarre, but I think for my patients, you know, I've heard so many times the struggles. I never judge anybody for smoking, because I know how addictive it is and I know how difficult my patients find it. And that's why we've got this free support available. If you just search smoke free, you can find a local stop smoking service and they will know how difficult it is. Nobody is going to judge you. Nobody is going to tell you that it's bizarre you haven't stopped already. I really think that's the wrong message, because we need people to recognize that we know how difficult it is for you. And we know how brave you are and how amazing it is when you do succeed.
And that, Sarah, is why you are the top media doctor to actually address these kind of things, which is very important. Sarah, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with you once again. I'll throw in the last two questions because they have become pretty much standard. Have you had a reasonably interesting...
I've had a lovely time and I'd love to come back.
Well, there you go. And I did have to pass on our best wishes from our wonderful regular colleague, Graham Harper, who, when he wasn't picking up BAFTA Awards, said, "Is that the Sarah Jarvis you're featuring after this feature?" I said, "Yes, it is the Dr. Sarah Jarvis." "Oh, she's fantastic," he says. So there we are.
Well,
we are.
Send him your very famous best continue regards. To grow. Thanks so much, Alex.